Well, you are a very busy woman. I have to suspect there are a lot of reasons for that. The talent is clearly obvious, but how much of this is because you've just been easy to work with? I always talk to young actors that I work with and say, ability's great, but you got to have that affability and the availability.
That's an interesting question. Seeing as how I have worked with several people, several young people who were not easy to work with, where I thought, oh, you know what? If I were hiring, I'm not so sure. If there were two people of equal talent and equally right for the role, I'm going to go for the one that's easy to work with. I hope I'm easy to work with. I think I am. I love the work and I show up and you know, I'm sort of ready to do it.
What goes into the decision-making process when it comes to the roles that you accept? I know one thing right away is no cockroaches, right?
That's right. I've worked with rats. I've worked with scorpions. I've worked with tarantulas. I've worked with bees. I've worked with snakes. But I could not do E.G. Marshall's role in Creepshow. I couldn't even watch it.
So what do you look for in a part these days that challenges you, that gets those creative juices flowing?
You know, I don't know. Let's see if I can be specific. I just know it when I read it. Well, I'll tell you honestly, right away, I look for the writer's ability to get proper grammar and proper spelling on the page, because I feel like if this person doesn't even know enough to proofread his work, I'm not so sure that, you know, the work's going to be so good. But that's beside the point. I just did a feature we shot in Kentucky last May that I'm very excited about, just because I just thought the script was so well written. And it was a character that I had, a character similar to a character that I had done for this director in a short film that we had done a couple of years ago. And he took that character and brought her into this feature in a totally different storyline. But some of her carried over. Oh, Richard, it's, you know, it has to be logical. It has to be, I find that I just was offered something where I didn't like the other characters. I didn't even like this one this much, but I didn't like their behavior and I just didn't like it. I'll tell you, years ago, my agent sent me a screenplay with an offer I guess at that time, he was an up-and-coming director. He was a very successful music artist. And it was a horror film. And I read 20 pages of it. And I called the agency and I said, guys, this is too much for me, too strong for me. I'm not big into horror anyway, even though that's what I always get cast as. I never go to see them. I've never even seen Psycho, you know. I don't enjoy watching them. But anyway, I said to the agency, this is not for me. I couldn't say these words. I wouldn't want my kids seeing this on screen or anything. And about a year later, I was at an autograph signing convention with my friend Bill Moseley, who had a line of people lined up, wanting his autograph. I mean, this line went out the door and down the street. And I said, "Bill, this is fantastic. What film are they asking for?" And he said, "The Devil's Rejects." And that's the one I had rejected. So many of the films that I am offered these days have absolutely no character development. Somebody is getting killed in the most grotesque way within 2 pages of the beginning of the script. You don't know them. You don't care about them. So really, you don't care about the fact that they're getting killed. And it's all about how can we kill this person, more vilely than anybody else has ever done. So those are the kinds of things I don't enjoy doing.
Well, I loved Duster, and I'm so sad to hear that we won't get a second season of that. What was it like working with J.J. Abrams?
Oh, that was so fantastic. Although, unfortunately, I showed up for work still on antibiotics from I had pneumonia, and we were filming up in Albuquerque, and I could barely breathe. I could barely walk three steps. So I have very little remembrance of just trying to get through it. But JJ was wonderful, and I was as disappointed as everyone else because the character that he had written for me was supposed to be featured in the second season, have a lot more to do. It was great fun, watching the show and seeing what he had done with me as a younger person.
Right. I thought that had to be a little bit mind-blowing for you.
That was delightful. Well, when he called me to offer me the role that I played, he said, "We'd like to do this, and I want to make sure it's okay with you." I said, "Yeah, of course." And it was great fun.
I want
And
to.
I thought the show was so well done.
Oh,
Oh my God.
I did too. It was great. I mean, I'm a sucker for that time period. That's when I grew up. So I love it. But I thought it was brilliant. And I'm disappointed we don't get to see more of it here. I want to go back to the early days, though. I went back and I read it when it first came out. But I went back when we knew you were coming on and reread your wonderful memoir. And all this
Oh,
started
thank
in a way
you.
the creative. Work for you did really began what in fifth grade when you started journaling?
Oh, yes. Well, my mother started me taking ballet when I was three, so much so that by the time I was 12, I hated it. I never wanted to take ballet again. And then when I was in fifth grade, someone told her that I could sing. So she asked me if I wanted to take singing lessons, and I went off and took singing lessons. And about that time, I started keeping a journal. Never in my life, anticipating that, many, many years later, I would be looking at it again because I was writing some stories from my life. But I actually got into acting. Probably I started in high school, and then I was working in a beauty salon just on Saturdays and after school, cleaning up hair and taking appointments and everything. And I lived in San Jose, California, which had a multi-million dollar community theater, really, called the San Jose Civic Light Opera. One of the clients at the beauty salon was on the board of directors. We started making small talk, and I said, "Oh, what shows are you doing?" My mother was a big theater fan. And she said, "Oh, we're doing The King and I." And my boss said, "Well, Adrienne sings. You ought to go in and audition." And so, okay, I went in and auditioned, and they hired me. And my first stage role was Tup Tim in The King and I. And then I just started doing musical theater. And when I graduated high school, the Civic Light Opera had a musical comedy review that I was part of, and we applied to the State Department and were chosen to go overseas. In those days, 1963, they called it the Orient, Southeast Asia, to entertain the armed forces. So my first professional job, $7 a day, was singing and dancing for the GIs. We were right on the DMZ in South Korea. We were in Japan. We were in an atomic testing center called Johnston Island. We were in not the Philippines, Okinawa, and ended up in Hawaii at I think it was Fort DeRussy, right there on Waikiki Beach. And then I came back to California and started college and figured maybe I'd get a degree and teach acting. I didn't know anybody earned a living as an actor, you know. And a friend that I was had done a production with said, "You know, you ought to go to New York and try and do this professionally." I thought, "Oh, well, okay, I'll try that. And if nothing happens by the time I'm 25, I'll go back to school and get my degree and teach acting." And, but by the
In New
time I was
York,
25,
you took a class with the legendary Lee Strasberg, but it really was, it was not for you. It
it
was
was
not what
not
you
for
hoped
me. I didn't get
it
it. I didn't get Lee. I didn't get Lee at all. You know, they were like sense memory and hold this cup and think about the smoke, the steam that's coming out of it and everything. It wasn't even that so much as it was very political in those days. And if you weren't acting on Broadway, nobody else in the class wanted to do a scene with you know. So I made it about three months at Strasberg's.
You made your
And
Broadway debut in Fiddler on the Roof with a pretty talented cast that included Bette Midler. Did that role have even more meaning for you because of your Armenian roots?
it sure did, you know. My grandparents survived the genocide, the first genocide. And here we were, you know, doing Fiddler on the Roof. And it had a lot of meaning. It's a beautiful show. I've done it now. I think I did Huddle twice. I did it on Broadway, and then I did a tour with Robert Merrill. Then I did Golda three times. And now I'm hoping somebody's going to hire me for Yenta.
You also
I
played a
think
great
that'd be a
role.
fun way to finish my
You
career.
played a great role. I work with high school actors, and one of my favorite musicals to direct is Pippin, and you got to play in the touring company the wonderful part of Bertha, the grandmother.
Yes, hanging upside down from a trapeze,
Ooh.
15 feet in the
Yeah,
air,
we talked to
singing a
Andrea
song.
Martin about that when she did the same thing. Wow, there's no way I could do that.
It was great fun. It was great fun. You know, people ask me, weren't you worried because we didn't have a net or anything? And it's sort of the same answer I give them when they ask me, weren't you worried about having kids at age 51? I don't have a lot of imagination. And so I don't think about what could happen. I had a great time doing that role. What a great thing to be able to do when you're in your 70s, you
Oh gosh,
know?
yeah, absolutely. You also, people, I'm sure, know that you originated the role of Rizzo in Grease, that iconic role, and one of those shows that began its life off Broadway, and now, all these decades later, it's become really part of the American canon of musical theater.
It has. And you know, I had an opportunity to invest in it,
Oh no.
but it was back in 1971, and I only had, you know, I had an emergency medical fund, and I didn't have any money. Both Barry Bostwick and I think we both regretted it, but you know, it was the beginning of my, it was really the beginning of my career. Fiddler was a fantastic experience, but I went in as a replacement, and so, you know, I had never been reviewed in New York. I had never been seen by producers or agents. That it had been on the boards for quite a while. So Grease really kicked everything off.
The role on Maude was such a groundbreaking television show, one that holds up all these years later with some important episodes that were way ahead of their time. And I understand that your relationship with the great Bea Arthur was more than just acting partners, that she became a real friend and mentor to you.
I loved her. I loved her. All of us. We were it was a joy to just get up and go to work with your family every day. Bea and Bill and Conrad and Rue and Esther. It was just, and Hermione when Hermione came along. I loved Bea. I really did.
Reading back through your book, I'd forgotten this from the first time I read it, and you talked about your appearances on talk shows and you loved Mike Douglas and Merv Griffin, but the Carson show, the Tonight Show, I think, as you said in the book, it was important to do that show, but you didn't find it especially enjoyable.
It was nerve-wracking, and there was a lot of pressure, at least in my mind. Maybe I was creating it, but a lot of pressure to score, you know what I mean? Whereas with Merv, I mean, oh my God, you just sat there and gossiped. And Mike Douglas was just the loveliest man in the world. And it was a joy. But with Johnny, I was never as comfortable. I think they were comfortable with me because I'm a talker. And so Johnny knew that he could trust me. And so, you know, they had me on with a lot of guest hosts, which was fun, you know, getting to know other people. But yeah, there was just more pressure.
Of course, people remember all the wonderful work you did with your husband at the time, John Carpenter, The Fog, Escape from New York, some really wonderful work. But in those days, people forget that if you were a well-known TV actor, sometimes you were put in that box by producers and people didn't look at you as being somebody who could also do movies. That was pretty rare.
That's right. The prevailing thought process is nobody's going to pay to see you in the movie theater if they can see you for free on Tuesday nights at 8, you know. And if it hadn't been for John, we did a television movie together called Someone's Watching Me, which is how we met. And then he was the one who wrote The Fog and wrote the character of Stevie Wayne for me and gave me my first feature film.
You had a little moment with Burt Reynolds that you write about in the book. And then years later, you were surprised that he reached out to you for a Cannonball Run. And as I recall, about the only good thing for you from that movie was the opportunity to meet and work with Roger Moore.
Yes. I mean, I loved working with Dom, and Dean Martin was great fun, you know. But I was starstruck with Roger. I really was. And that part was fun. The movie itself wasn't as fun for me, but I don't know if it was before that or after that that Bert directed me in a production of, you know, it was before I did Cannonball Run.
Right, down at his theater in Jupiter, Florida?
Yes, he directed me in a production of One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest with Marty Sheen playing McMurphy.
McMurphy, and you were Nurse Ratched?
I was Nurse Ratched.
Wow.
And so, you know, in spite of our romance going by the wayside, we remained friends. And he had wanted me to come down there and direct Grease. And I thought, I'm not a director. I can't do that. But then he offered me Nurse Ratched, and then Cannonball Run came along.
So we're in Bangor, Maine, the hometown of Stephen King. He used to actually own our radio station for many, many years. The role of Billy in Creepshow, is that still among your favorite parts?
Yes, it is. It really is. It's also, I just showed it to my son's girlfriend. She had never seen it, and I hadn't seen it in a million years. And I mean, it's really fun to watch too. You know, I had a great time doing it. But I do get a kick out of watching it because she's, I would hope, she's pretty far afield from me. I don't drink. I've never been drunk. And I hope to God I'm not as much of an unmitigated, I don't know what we can say on TV, on radio.
You can say the word. Yes, absolutely.
She's an unmitigated bitch. But I understood her. I knew her. I understood why she acted that way. And I love her.
I love the story of you for the HBO series that was so great, of you learning how to dance with that snake.
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah. As only you can find in Los Angeles, when they told me I had been cast. I was going to be dancing with snakes.
And they said, no, you don't want a belly dancer, but we know who you need to go see.
Yes, yes. I found a snake dancer. And I quickly learned that when you're dancing with snakes, you don't do the choreography.
Right. The snake leads.
You just follow the snake. Whatever the snake wants to do, you do that. In my case, the snake wanted to defecate on my costumes. We were in the middle of rehearsal and I thought, what is that wet on my leg?
No.
But I had great affection for those snakes.
The work you have done as a voiceover artist, that's been a whole second career for you. Do you find that enjoyable, doing that voiceover work, Catwoman and so many more?
I do. For several reasons. First of all, you don't have to put makeup on. And you don't have to worry about a costume. And you don't have to worry about what your hair looks like. But more than that, yeah, I do enjoy it. I've done a lot of video games. The most popular one these days, I guess, is I was the overseer in Fallout 76. And, you know, most people, most fans of my films and everything don't know any of that. God of War and Halo 4 and Batman Arkham Asylum and a whole bunch of others, some of them of which I don't even know the name, because when we're offered the roles for video games these days, they change the name on the contract to protect the privacy of the project.
Sure.
So I just show up and like, oh, it's this, it's that.
Is it rewarding to you to have that kind of career where you're known, each generation has got a role, some work that you've done that it feels like it's theirs. And now we're talking about three different generations that can say, I loved her in Maude. Well, oh, I loved her in this video game. Nope, I know her from Escape from New York.
You know what's, because I think most young people they don't pay attention to who's doing the voices for their video games or the animation or whatever. And so, you know, I'm sure that, but what's happened in the last, I don't know, 5 years, maybe 10 years, is that those films that we did in the 80s, like The Fog or Escape from New York or Swamp Thing or Creepshow, have found a whole new audience in young people. And so that is incredibly gratifying, you know. And Catwoman, I mean, Batman has had such an incredible resurgence. I have so many, you know, 20-somethings and maybe even under 20-somethings come up to me to say that, you know, the role of Catwoman really had an impact on their lives, and that they're watching it now. And none of us knew back in those days when we were making these movies that they would have such a remarkable lifespan.
It's interesting, too, when you say that you're not a horror fan, and we're not well acquainted with horror movies, but I talked to enough actors who've said it's almost like in comedy, you don't wink at the audience, you play it straight. And I feel like it's the same approach when you're doing a horror film, that you're playing that truth in the scene, and you're not thinking about the reaction of the audience and whether they're going to be scared. It's what your character is experiencing.
Yes, yes, you have to. In fact, I had someone send me a cameo yesterday. I, if you know what cameos
oh, sure,
are,
sure, yeah.
You know, or request a cameo. And It's the first time she said, "What are your thoughts and feelings when you are doing a role?" How did she put it? When you are doing a role with a director and a cast that you've never worked with before. And I thought, isn't that interesting? And I mean, what I'm thinking about, regardless of what the genre is what the character is thinking about or what the character is feeling, you know? And Billy in Creepshow is a prime example. If you were just to read her and to play her as a nasty, you know, nagging, what's the word that starts with an A? Carbon? No, haranguing bitch. It wouldn't work. You have to understand why she is that way. You know, Billy expected her life to be totally different. She married this man and she expected to be the belle of the ball in academia and she's been terribly disappointed, and she's disappointed in him, and maybe that's what started her drinking. But she doesn't think she's a bitch, you know. She's just coming from a place of my life isn't working and it's your fault, you know, Henry. And I think that's why she works as a character.
Now, despite your work in musicals, in your memoir, you wrote about the fact that it took you a while to have confidence in your ability as a singer. Your album, I thought, was terrific. I loved it. Obviously, Worst Things That I Could Do was great, but I loved your version of True Companion. And now, at this point in your life, do you look at yourself and say, yeah, I'm a singer?
Oh, thank you very much. I can sing. I can sing. I mean, I can sing. Yeah, but no, I don't. I still don't think of myself as a singer. It just depends on the role, you know. But to I mean, there are a lot of roles I couldn't sing, you know. But if I pick the right material, if it's yeah, I guess I can, but I don't think of myself as a singer.
When might we see this film that you shot in Kentucky? Any timeline for
Oh,
that?
I'm really excited about it. They're just finishing post. A side note, and it has nothing to do with me. I had no idea this was going to happen. But actually, the director reached me originally through his writing partner, who was a very close friend of my son, Cody Carpenter. And they had gone to school together. And the director had also gone to that high school. I think he was a year behind Cody. So they reached me originally with the idea for the short film through their friendship with Cody. So, cut to several years later, we are making this film. And unbeknownst to me, the director is a huge fan of my son, Cody. And he calls Cody, who lives in Japan, and says, "I'd like you to score this film." And Cody said, "Do you know the kind of music I make?" And Tyler Savage, the director, said, "Yes, Cody, I'm a huge fan. I'd like you to score this film." So then they told me later I had nothing to do with it. But Cody is doing the music, and I believe they're almost finished with the post-production, and I'm hoping that there will be a release at, you know, maybe at the beginning of next year.
Well, that's exciting. We'll look forward to all that. And imagine none of this might have happened if things had gone differently and you had gotten a publishing deal for The Secret Life of Kenneth Turner.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, boy, you did do your homework.
It's wonderful to talk with you. I've been a fan of your work for a long, long time, and so great to still see you working and turning in great performances, and can't wait for this new film.
Thank you very much. Thank you so much. This was a pleasure for me.
That was wonderful. Thank you again.
Thanks, Rich.
Right. Be
Bye-bye.
Well. Bye-bye now.